Broadcasting live from the Buckhead Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Legal Experts.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to the Atlanta Legal Experts radio show. I am your host, Emily Rowell. We also have Rich Casanova with Buckhead Business Radio X in the background working
here.
With us.
Yeah, good morning,
present.
Emily.
Good morning.
This is going to be a great show. I've been looking forward to this all weekend. Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. I'm excited. We are actually going to have a great show about ale today.
Finally, right? But they didn't bring any samples. All we got is coffee, but yeah, maybe afterwards. Yeah.
So our special guests today are Taylor Harper with Taylor, Fail Harper, Lumsden, and Hess PC.
Good morning.
Nancy Palmer with the Georgia Craft Brewers Guild.
Good morning.
Morning. Tommy Williams with Independent Distilling Company.
Good morning.
And last but not least, Eleanor Benson of Moondog Growlers.
Good morning.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you guys today. Later on in the show, we'll be hearing more about the growlers and how popular they are becoming today. But for now, we're going to start with Taylor Harper, and I'm going to start with his bio. Mr. Harper's practice has a heavy focus on the hospitality and beverage alcohol industries. Specifically, he assists breweries, wineries, distilleries, importers, brokers, wholesalers, hotels, restaurants, package stores, and others in beverage alcohol, administrative, and regulatory matters at the federal, state, and local levels. Sounds like fun. His practice involves all aspects of commercial litigation, including contract disputes, restrictive covenants, trade secrets, insurance coverage, secured transactions, and real estate litigation, and much more. Mr. Harper earned his Juris Doctorate from Georgia State University College of Law, where he was a member of the Moot Court Board, as well as the Student Trial Lawyers Association. He earned his undergraduate degree in political science and international affairs from Georgia State University, where he was graduated with honors. Thank you so much for being here this morning.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, this is going to be great. I have a few questions for you. The first one, we're going to start right off the air. Beverage alcohol law is such a specialized area of law. How did you get into it?
Well, the firm I'm with has had a beverage alcohol practice for, let's see, since the late 70s. So there was just a wealth of experience in that particular area of law. We're a full-service commercial firm. So when I started a few years ago, I had my hands in everything. And I still do, to some degree, have my hands in everything, but I was particularly drawn to the beverage alcohol industry. I've always been fascinated by the industry, both in terms of how the products are made. You know, I like using the products in moderation, of course, and also just the history of prohibition and its repeal. And I guess, you know, given the kind of robust beverage alcohol practice of the firm and the fact that it is a specialized area of law, I saw it as an opportunity to create a niche practice for myself in an industry in which I was already interested.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Is there anything that makes this area of law particularly unique?
Sure. Yeah. For one, it's highly regulated. So there, the web of laws governing the alcohol industry is both complex and vast. You know, generally speaking, there are three levels of jurisdiction. So you have the feds, you have the states, and you have the local jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. Federal law applies nationwide. The states each have their own set of laws that are different in most cases. Mm-hmm. So that's 50 jurisdictions right there.
Right.
And then you have local jurisdictions like cities, counties, towns. You take Georgia, for instance. Georgia has 159 counties. Well, that's a lot of jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. They have over 500 cities. And that's really a lot of jurisdictions. And that's just one state, right?
Right.
The other factor is what we call the three-tier system. And the three-tier system was adopted or implemented by most states, I guess, you know, right before and after the repeal of prohibition. And essentially what it does is it keeps separate the three tiers of the industry. Those three tiers being you have suppliers at the top level, like breweries and distilleries, wineries. And then you have distributors in the middle, and then you have retailers on the bottom tier, and then the retailers ultimately sell to the consumer. So the way it works is the supplier can only sell to the distributor can only sell to the retailer, and then the retailer sells to consumers like me and you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I guess it's the it's the intersection of the three-tier system and the three levels of jurisdiction, along with the fact that there are so many various sets of laws within those jurisdictions that make this such a unique area of law and industry.
Do you know every single one of them? I'm just kidding.
Absolutely, of course.
Just kidding. So you mentioned a little bit about who you represent. Can you give me more specifics on what clients you represent?
Sure, at least as far as the type of clients. In regard to the beverage alcohol industry, we represent suppliers, for instance, breweries, distilleries, wineries. We represent importers and brokers. We represent at the retail level restaurants, hotels, package stores, bars, clubs, etc. I guess it's easier to say in short that we represent, we have clients in all three tier levels.
Okay. And what exactly do you do for those?
Well, there's it's kind of a vast array of services that we offer, and rather than ramble off, a list of all the things we do, it's probably easier just to say that, like I said, we are a full-service commercial firm. So we have attorneys like myself that focus, predominantly on the regulatory aspects of the industry. We also have attorneys who focus on litigation, corporate transactional work, employment law-related matters, commercial real estate-related matters, mm-hmm. et cetera. I guess the businesses we represent are like many other businesses, and they need the same legal services.
Sure.
That said, however, our experience allows us to view those beverage alcohol businesses within the context of the alcohol regulatory system and all the complex laws that are accompany it.
Right. Sounds like you're more like a one-stop shop for those types of businesses, especially.
Yeah, essentially, yes.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. So you provide full service.
Absolutely.
Which is great. The craft beer industry seems to be exploding. Why is that?
I was asked this question by a reporter a few weeks ago, and to be honest, I didn't really have a very good answer. I think that's because it's, the result from a multitude of factors. But over the last few weeks, I've been thinking about it, and I've come up with a theory. My colleagues can chime in on what they think about this. I don't know how sound it is. but here goes. So, 100 years ago or so, people didn't ask, didn't question where their food came from. They knew. They either grew it themselves or, they got it from Joe, the local farmer, right?
Right.
And I guess it was in the, late 30s, definitely the 40s, and definitely in the early 50s that this kind of corporate food processing became so prevalent. Mm-hmm. I think some refer to it as corporate cooking. And corporate cooking, provided quick, convenient, and I guess sometimes, tasty meals. Mm-hmm. what could go wrong? Well, what could go wrong, I think, took, decades to really start to figure out. And, now we're seeing a rise in obesity, rise in increased rates in diabetes. We're hearing about high fructose corn syrup, bleached sugar, pesticides, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that people became and probably are frightened a little by what they don't know about what they're putting in their body. Mm-hmm. And when you couple that with, there's definitely been an increase in people's awareness of their own health and mm-hmm. their lifestyles, and they're examining that, and they're saying, do I exercise enough? And, do I eat enough vegetables? Do I drink enough water?
Mm-hmm.
Or beer, right? Right.
Kidding.
All in moderation, of course. and I think that with that, it kind of naturally leads to people flock to the local producers, mm-hmm. Including breweries and distilleries, because you can put a face to the product. If I wake up on Saturday morning, I can't go and meet the owners of Nabisco or Anheuser-Busch.
Right.
But I can wake up and I can go down to Independent Distilling and talk with the owner, Tommy Williams, or I can go down to Red Brick Brewery and talk to Bob Budd, the CEO, and ask, what are they using in their products?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that makes a really big difference.
Sure.
I think there's a sense of trust and a sense of accountability there.
I love that answer. I think that's a great answer. It's nowadays it's getting to farm to table.
Mm, absolutely.
And you're preaching to the choir here. I'm all about what's in that. Where, you know, reading labels and driving my family crazy.
That's good to hear, because I was thinking that you were going to say the theory was just complete hogwash, but
no. Okay, let's see. We kind of talked about what's recent. Is there anything particularly hot going on right now in this industry?
Yeah, there's a few hot button issues. I'd say, over the past couple of years, there's been a push by suppliers, mostly breweries and distilleries, to tweak the three-tier system a little bit to modernize it. I guess that means to implement minor adjustments to the current structure.
Okay.
Most of our listeners here have probably been to a brewery at some point or been to a distillery. And when you go to, let's just use a brewery for example, when you go to a brewery, you go on a tour and you get to try some free samples. That's the way it works.
Mm-hmm.
But the brewery cannot sell you beer to consume on the premise, and the brewery cannot sell you beer to take home with you. So if you want to take beer home with you, you have to go to a grocery store or a package store or some other retail licensee to get the product. I think that the brewers and distillers would like to see laws passed that help them generate additional income by being allowed to sell in limited amounts and limited circumstances to directly to the consumer that's visiting their facility.
Absolutely. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Especially after trying beers.
Right.
You don't want to be driving all over the place.
Particularly if you're thinking of it in terms of tourism, right? And, mm-hmm. Your cousin comes down from North Carolina and you go and you visit Red Brick Brewery. Well, it would be nice for him to be able to buy something right there.
Right. Makes it a one-stop shop again.
Yeah.
For everybody. Are there any breweries or distilleries that you recommend visiting?
Well, given that I have some of my colleagues here, I'm definitely going to recommend that people go check out Red Brick. It's great fun. And also independent distilling down in Decatur. Another brewery I particularly like is a Jekyll up in Alpharetta. So if you're up north, go check out Jekyll. And if you're in town in Atlanta, go check out Red Brick and independent distilling.
Definitely going to do that myself. Well, my husband will especially.
Oh, let me know. I'll go down there with you.
Oh, sounds good.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Nancy, you said you knew a little bit about what was going on too, as far as why they, are looking for the local distillery. And did you want to expand on that a little bit? And then I'll read your biography.
Sure. And I think that Taylor actually hit the nail on the head that this is part of the larger movement to know where your food comes from. And there's also, I found amongst our craft breweries that there's kind of a team element, mm-hmm. where people enjoy being part of the team. We have fantastic volunteers. Each one of our breweries has their own sets of volunteers. And there's this sense in a community that the craft breweries are really involved in the communities, and the communities are really involved back.
Right.
And so there's also this kind of team feeling to each one of our breweries, who has their own group of people who really love that brewery, who come every week. And they're kind of acting more like your favorite restaurant, than just a place that makes beer.
Right. Well, I will go ahead and read your biography, and you can actually find the full biography of all of our guests today online at the Ale Radio website. Nancy Palmer is a perennial student of the beverage industry, having spent a decade exploring all facets of the business. Though she's concentrated on wine for most of her career, she found tremendous pleasure in learning about both beer and spirits. Her favorite aspect of the business is certainly education. She enjoys making the complicated, often intimidating world of high-end beverage accessible and interesting for anyone with any background. Her career began while working for Five Points Bottle Shop in Athens, Georgia. After graduating from the University of Georgia, she worked at several establishments, not only waitressing and bartending, but also conducting many wine classes at area restaurants. Now splitting her time between Athens and Atlanta, Nancy is happy to have launched Cork and Key. She currently manages the wine programs for numerous restaurants and provides clients and is enjoying, I'm sorry, in private clients and is enjoying her work with the Georgia Craft Brewers Guild. And of course, she's excited to see Cork and Key grow. We're very glad to have you today. My first question for you are, what are common legal needs for craft brewers in Georgia?
Well, I've been working with the Georgia Craft Brewers Guild for about 2 years, and I've determined that the common legal needs are almost everything. What we have is an incredibly young industry, and because the industry is so young, we have needs that range from corporate governance to structure, voting rights, and the kind of way that a business is created, all the way to employment law and then over into the regulatory needs. Most law firms would focus just on regulation or something like that. And we find that because our businesses are so young, we have 31 members of the guild. There's 31 breweries in Georgia.
Fantastic.
And of those 31, over half are under 3 years old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, and that kind of has to do with when they start doing production. So, you know, with so many young breweries, the needs are vast and complex.
Sure. So you help them in the, you know, to get legal and to...
Yes, mostly by asking Taylor.
That's his job.
We very much appreciate that.
So what are the biggest challenges that face Georgia breweries today?
Well, actually, we are sending out our kind of legislative survey this morning, and we're going to get some feedback from our members on what they find. But generally speaking, the number one problem is kind of cumbersome regulatory environment. And that's not to say that the regulatory environment is necessarily bad. It's just cumbersome. There's kind of these awkward workarounds where tours are free, except you buy a pint glass if you want to have a souvenir glass. It's kind of a complicated way of doing business.
Right.
And so breweries are interested in simplifying that a little bit.
Sure.
And in a way that benefits not only our breweries, but also our distributors by kind of better marketing for our breweries and our retailers as well. Kind of rising tide lifts all boats scenario. Gotcha.
So how could the legal and regulatory environment in Georgia be changed to promote growth in the craft beer industry?
One thing that we've been focusing on for the last 2 years, and I'm hoping doesn't change because we put a lot of work into it, but we're responsive to our members and maybe they've changed their mind about what they want. But what we've been working on is allowing off-premise sales for breweries. There's two types of retail sales. Sales on-premise, which means that you consume the beverage on the premise. That would be like a bar or a restaurant.
Sure.
And then there's off-premise sales. That's like a package store where you purchase something and then you have to leave to consume it. Our breweries have indicated that off-premise sales would be something that they were interested in.
Okay.
And that would be something that we as the guild are in turn interested in. For brew pubs, that would look something along the lines of growler sales to go.
Sure.
So you could go to a brew pub, buy a growler and leave with it. And for our production breweries, that would look like packaged goods. So a six pack or a growler or a 750 or whatever packaging makes sense for them. But they would be like to be able to have the flexibility to sell that retail product. Our breweries see thousands and thousands and thousands of people come to their tours every week. And to be able to kind of extend that business relationship to a kind of final sale would be fantastic.
Oh, that would help tremendously because
yes.
By the time they get to the actual store, you don't know what they're going to get. They might forget which one's what,
or
they might not even get to the store.
Right. And oftentimes what's available at the brewery is not available at the store.
Gotcha.
And kind of hunting down where something is at any given moment can be a little difficult as well, particularly if they're wanting something that's seasonal or very limited in release. And also it kind of helps Georgia breweries increase our footprint outside of just their zip code. Because a lot of people will come in and use brewery visits as beer tourism, is what we like to call it. People like to come in from other states, from other cities, they visit, and we'd like them to be able to take that product, leave with it, and go out of state, go share it with their friends, and really expand the footprint of our breweries via those retail sales.
I'm going to ask you, Taylor, one more question. Are we close to that at all in changing those regulatories?
We are closer.
That's good.
It hasn't been successful in the last couple of years, but it's a process that's going to take a little bit of time.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody knew that going into it. And I would say that the hardliners are softening a bit. They're a little bit more willing to listen at this point, which is a good sign.
Okay. Well, thanks.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot there. So how does Georgia's regulatory environment compare to other southeastern states?
We are by far very, we're restrictive. Mississippi has similar laws to us.
I was about to say, I know that Mississippi was pretty.
Right. In Alabama, a brewery can sell, for on-premise consumption. So you can walk into a brewery, order a pint of beer at an unlimited amount. In Tennessee, you can purchase a beer for on-premise consumption and off-premise consumption. In South Carolina, you can do the same, on-premise and off-premise. In North Carolina, you can do on-premise and off-premise and almost anything else you want to do in North Carolina, which is fantastic. And then Florida also has on-premise and off-premise consumption. And Florida is kind of the oldest southeastern state. They passed those laws in the late 60s. And nothing's gone terribly wrong in Florida, sure. At least not relation to beer. So we really think that kind of in comparison to other southeastern states, Georgia is behind. Uh-huh. Our industry is small but growing. And, with Atlanta as the southeastern hub, I really think that Georgia has the ability to really have an explosive growth in breweries. We can double our size in the next 5 years, but we do have to make some regulatory changes.
Sure. So bring even more people here.
Exactly.
But they have all the influence of all the states around them. So mm-hmm. listen up and look around you. So how much has Georgia's craft beer industry grown in the last 5 years?
Oh, it's been amazing. The Guild was formed in 2010, and I believe when it was formed, there were 7 members, maybe 9 members. And since then, every brewery that's opened in Georgia has joined the Guild. And so we're very proud of that attendance record, if you will.
Sure.
And we are growing at an incredible rate. Right now, we have in our Breweries in Planning program, we have 5 breweries, and these are breweries that we identify as having kind of a good chance of opening within 6 months. And then kind of on our radar, I have a list of kind of 16 or 17 that are on my radar of people that, what I call them is the hopers and dreamers,
sure.
The people that think they want to open a brewery. And then if they can sit through me trying to talk them out of it and they still want to, then they're good to go.
Gotcha. That's funny. So how has Taylor, Fail Harper, Lumsden, Hess, PC helped the Guild?
They have been incredibly helpful, mostly helpful in that Taylor answers my phone calls, which is fantastic when I have kind of small regulatory questions. But in a huge way, they attended our symposium that we did a few months ago. And the symposium was meant to provide some science education for brewers that are considering opening breweries, and then a lot of business education. And I called it my Scared Straight program. And Taylor in particular was a host of 5 seminars, and the law firm provided a 2-hour seminar on the broad strokes of what it takes to open a business and what it takes to open a brewery in particular. And I think that everyone who came out of that seminar was exhausted and excited.
Gotcha.
About moving forward. And hopefully these guys got a little bit of business out of it too.
Sure.
We did.
Sounds like a great partnership.
It is. Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm going to move down to Tommy Williams. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we'd love for you to be here. Tommy Williams is the Chief Operating Officer of Independent Distilling Company, LLC, located in Decatur, Georgia. IDC is the first legal distillery in the metro Atlanta area since Prohibition. Along with his business partner, Michael Anderson, they are focusing on whiskey and rum at the moment and have been shipping to their distributor for introduction into the market. The first product they are selling is Hellbender, a copper pot distilled corn whiskey. The rum will be available later this summer. Hurry.
No, yeah, right. Exactly. It's good stuff too, actually.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. And you get to sample it.
Absolutely. That's a perk of the job.
Sure.
So, yeah.
So how did you decide to open a micro distillery?
You know, I'll blame my partner, actually. And like Nancy said, we tried to talk each other out of it, but he came up with the crazy idea after reading an article about craft distilling in the Northwest and out West in particular. And neither one of us, frankly, knew that we could do such a thing. And so after a lot of due diligence and some research and that sort of thing, we dove in headfirst, and 4 years later, here we are. So it took us that long to get to this point. So, and it's also part of my family's heritage. My grandfather in South Georgia made whiskey, or quote unquote moonshine, back when it was not exactly legal. And and so it was part of that heritage that I wanted to sort of relive, but on the legal side.
Gotcha. And what did you do prior to this?
My background is, I scratched my entrepreneurial itch about 5 or 6 years ago, and I've been focusing on small business, mostly on the food and franchise side. I spent some time with the big companies for a while and decided that if I'm going to mop a floor, I want to mop my own floor. And so I've been out here fighting the entrepreneurial battle here ever since.
Sure.
Having a good time.
How long was the process to open the distillery?
Yeah, like I said, it took us 4 years from the date that the idea was dreamt up in my basement. And we spent a lot of time looking for real estate because, as you can imagine, not everybody wants to have a distillery that's making alcohol right next door to them. So we're limited as to where we can go and how we go. And that's how we ended up in Decatur. They rolled out the red carpet for us and had to make some changes, frankly, to their city ordinances, rather. And then once we got in there, then we started our permitting process with the feds and the state and with the city of Decatur themselves. And being all the luck that I have, we filed our federal permit right as the government shut down last fall. So our paperwork sat on a series of desks for a while. But it took us a while. Then we had to order. And not everybody knows what distilling is. You know, every time we would approach somebody, they said, oh, you're going to make beer. And so it's an education. Like Nancy said, it's a small group, and it's even smaller on the distillery side.
Right.
I think there's, and Taylor, correct me if I'm wrong, I think there's a half a dozen or so of us operating in the state right now.
Yeah, about 10.
Yeah, okay. Wow, more than that. So they're popping up, and which is good. And it's a good group, and we're real excited to be a part of it here in Georgia, the movement.
Good. Yeah. And we're excited too.
Yeah. Thank you.
And we also have Eleanor Benson today.
Good morning.
Eleanor didn't start out in the beer business. Unless you consider enjoying a cold one while studying for the bar exam as being in the business, that is.
That's right.
Her love of special beer began way back in the late 80s while attending GSU Law School. Her study group was made up of her beer tasting buddies, fortunately, and together, between bar review sessions, they blind tasted an array of types and styles of beer. Little did she know back then that she was preparing for a career that's a far cry from practicing law. Eleanor has enjoyed successful careers in law, marketing, and interior design, so she jumped at the chance to combine her background and creativity with one of her favorite hobbies, craft beer, and now she is the co-owner of Moondog Growlers with 3 locations and over 100 taps. She is keenly aware of the changes in the craft beer industry as well as the challenges facing brewers and retailers of craft brews. So this is just an awesome discussion. I'm telling you what, this is probably our best show yet.
I agree. I concur, whatever, yeah. I'm just waiting for the after party. Y'all will stay until the evening, to our evening show, right? Yeah.
Absolutely.
We'll move the party to the Growler store.
Oh, nice, even better, yeah.
So tell me a little bit more about what we've been talking about, the current issues facing the craft brew industry today.
Well, I know it's radio, so you couldn't see my head going up and down, but, you know, listening to Taylor and listening to Nancy, we're a little tiny microcosm of all that they are discussing. And clearly our issues are different than what brewers are facing. But the bottom line is, and perfectly said earlier, Nancy, the rising tide thing is important. We know, in terms of looking at the marketing for Moondog, that we want people to know about us. We want to know, want them to know about our, you know, our beer geeks and our great beers and everything. But bottom line is if people don't know about craft beer and they don't know about growlers, in general, the option of taking draft beer to go, we're out of business. So it is definitely definitely in our favor to support these brewers, to encourage them to have things like growlers on premise. People say, well, isn't that going to be, you know, bad for you? Absolutely not. 100% they should have growlers. The more people learn about their beers, they can't always go down to the brewery. So then they're going to come to their neighborhood growler store and buy those same beers in their neighborhood. So it's a win-win. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, it's kind of like what Nancy was talking about, the team effort between everybody.
Exactly right.
And everybody's sitting here nodding their heads.
Yeah. I live in Dunwoody, and there's a Moondog Growlers shop in Dunwoody. And, you know, if I want to go get some of a, you know, Red Brick Laughing Skull, I'm not going to drive down to Midtown to go get it. I'm going to go over to Eleanor's and get it.
I live in Dunwoody, too, so you actually have a new customer.
There you go.
You'll probably see a bearded man come in very often. I'm a little more on the wine side, but I do like to taste the different flavors.
I'm in Sandy Springs. I guess that's worth a drive over to Dunwoody or across the street.
Yeah. Except we have one in Sandy Springs as well, so we're there for you.
Look at you, whatever, yeah. But not one right here on Buckhead on Lenox Road in the basement or anything, right?
Yet.
Oh, nice.
Darn it.
And I have one of my own personal questions for people out there.
You said your own brewery, wouldn't we?
Oh, no.
A little personal, yeah.
For people that don't know, what is a growler?
In our state, a growler is two different sizes, 32 ounces, basically 2 pints, or 64 ounces, which is 4 pints. It's a glass, typically a glass container. You come in, you look at a bar like you would almost see anywhere else. We've got 40 taps, for example, in Dunwoody. You buy the growler one time, very recyclable item, and you fill it up and take that draft beer. We seal it up in a way that makes it legal so that you don't have an open container issue going on. Okay. Enjoy it at home, rinse it out, bring it back, and pick out something else.
Now, are you able to do some sample taste before you pick which ones you want?
We are. We typically do it as either a single taste or a flight, 3 2-ounce tastes. And it's a fun way to learn. And we have very knowledgeable guys. We do call them beer geeks, but that is a term of endearment. Nothing bad about it at all. You know, say you want to compare, you know, a sessionable IPA with a West Coast IPA with a double IPA. Well, you can do that because to try to describe something, it's like explaining what red is. It's very, very difficult to do that. So if you have the opportunity to taste and think about what is being described to you by the guy and then have it in your mouth, it's a fabulous opportunity to learn about beer.
Well, that's awesome. So then do you have people come with their regular mixes? You know, they come back and say, I'll take the regular, and they have a mix of different things, or?
You know, the thing is that because of the wide variety of beers, and gosh, like you said, just in Georgia now, it's amazing. Our taps are changing all of the time. So sometimes we are faced with that little disappointed, oh, you don't have that anymore. But then we can go, but that's okay. We've got something
even better.
Different, good, better, you know, let's try this. And then, you know, you'll have people suddenly going, well, I didn't know I liked a stout. I didn't know I liked a hoppy brown ale. You know, it's fun. I'll tell you what, no offense to being a lawyer, but it's a much happier world that I'm in right now.
Taylor's nodding his head or whatever. Yeah. You can't dispute that. Even an attorney won't argue that or whatever. Yeah.
Speechless.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was going to say one other thing. You were talking about the growth in Georgia brewers. We decided we wanted to put on a beer event for a local charity, the Dunwoody Nature Center. And we hosted a Tap into Georgia beer event and could not have had better feedback. The people loved the idea that it wasn't enormous, that they were just talking to Georgia brewers. They weren't standing in long lines. They were there and they were able to talk to the guys about what they were brewing. And the fact that when I went to organize this, that I had 25 choices to invite to this, you know, because you might have thought, well, it might have been, who could have a brew fest with 5 breweries? But all of a sudden, here we had 18, and it was eye-opening even for me, and I'm in the business, what we have available to us as consumers in Georgia. So definitely want to support that movement.
Awesome. And it sounds like I said before, the team effort, but you've worked with all of them together and probably helped them as well, you know, get legal and...
Well, yeah, I've definitely try to help when I can. You know, I can say, you know, Independent Distilling and Moondogs are not clients of mine. They're more so friends of mine. But, you know, my kind of approach to, you know, the practice of law and just life generally, I guess, is, well, I'll back up. There's a book I read called The Go-Giver. Have you ever heard of it?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's a great book. I think the author's name is Bob Berg, I believe. And it's a work of fiction, but has lots of great principles in it. I guess the kind of underlying or the overarching theme is, you know, rather than go out and be a go-getter, be a go-giver and stop worrying about what you can get from other people and worry about what you can give them, how you can help them. And so that's kind of what I tried to do. And it's funny, I talk to a lot of people and they read that book and they start trying to help others. And sometimes they start with the wrong motivation. They want to help others because they want something in return. But the thing about, you know, helping other people is that it changes you, and, it's addictive in a way. And so even if you start with the wrong motivations, ultimately, you'll be doing it for the right reasons. And so I, you know, try to help Eleanor when I can, and Tommy when I can, and Nancy when I can, you know, irrespective of if they're going to refer something to me or use me for something. But, it's about cultivating relationships, and
yes,
that's
absolutely
what we're doing.
Yeah, that's why we're here today, actually. Rich, did you have any further questions for any of our guests today?
Well, I've asked for samples, but I think I already got the answer to that. Yeah, it's after hours in Dunwoody and Sandy Springs and elsewhere. But no, this
Five
is interesting.
Somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. And no, I think it's interesting the interplay of the legal aspect, because, you know, beer and the distilleries and everything we've talked about is, and the guild, it's all, you know, enjoyable time, but, you know, you have to follow the letter of the law, and right. And at some point, as much fun as it is, it's still a business, right? Yeah. And it's great to have a Taylor and other resources, you know, at your disposal. Yeah.
I think I do have one more question for the students, law students that are wanting to get into this industry. Do you have any words of advice?
Oh, wow. I wonder if somebody had asked me that when I was in law school. Yeah. I would definitely take some classes in regulatory law. And it's really a tough thing to prepare for, because it's such a unique area of law. Mm-hmm. And so much of the rules are really unwritten. You know, there's not a, you know, let's say you want to draft an operating agreement for a client. Well, there's a lot of books on how to draft an operating agreement. Mm-hmm. There aren't books on licensing and tied house issues and all the things that accompany entering the craft beverage industry. You know, I'd say take regulatory classes, and if more than anything, start keeping up with what's going on in the industry. You know,
sure.
Just by reading articles and stuff, you'll learn a lot about various regulations and how the industry works in general. That'll help you if you do want to enter this practice area. And if you do, reach out to me.
Okay.
Okay. I was distracted by sending out some tweets or whatever. So I do have a couple of good questions for the group. I'd like to real quickly just go around, because we get some time here. Find out what's your challenge with your business? What do you find like a challenge, or what most people, the biggest misconception people have? And then what you enjoy most about what you do. And while you're thinking of that, I just thought it was interesting. Give you a moment to think about that. While we were tweeting, we had a couple of responses actually from a gentleman with Vienna Beef. He covers the whole Eastern Seaboard, Jim Silverman, and he was listening to Taylor here, and he wants to introduce you to some folks in the business. But where was his question? Oh, your answer to, because you were hesitant about your answer to the why the craft industry is exploding. He said it was perfect, all in caps, whatever. Yeah, so stick with that answer, I guess. Yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you.
And yeah, and there's a lot of other mentions, whatever.
So, I'd like to say too, when you answer the question, the toughest thing in your industry, and then the most exciting part about your job, finish with your contact and how people can in touch with you, so they know from listening to this how to get you.
Yeah, so yeah, how are our audience and listeners get back in touch with you?
Sure. I don't know if I'd say this is necessarily a challenge, but what happens a lot of times is that you know, Nancy talked about how she has, I guess, 16 or 17 breweries who are kind of in the dream stage. And we have free consultations, right? You know, we'll talk to somebody for an hour or so about what's involved with starting a brewery. And a lot of the people that come to us, you can see that they get a little bit overwhelmed with they didn't anticipate how much is involved. And so, you know, we try to reassure them that it is possible. Mm-hmm. You just have to really plan.
Right.
And so that can be challenging in the sense of it's going to take them longer than they anticipated. And ultimately that means for them to be a client of ours, it'll also take longer.
Right.
But it's better to know that up front than to try to figure it out on the back end.
Sure.
I guess the most rewarding thing is it goes back to, you know, starting a brewery or starting a distillery. In most cases, it is someone's dream. Mm-hmm. And so we get to help someone realize their dream, and that's really cool, particularly when you see it come to fruition and you get to go to their distillery or go to their brewery and try their beer and, you know, see them flourish. It's pretty fantastic.
That's awesome.
And as far as contacting me, I guess the easiest way is probably just to go to our website, which is www.tfhlegal.com. And, you know, the phone numbers are on there, email addresses are on there, and you can reach out to me anytime.
Thank you so much for being here this morning.
Thank you.
Nancy Palmer.
I'll have to second what Taylor said, that one of the challenges that being a member or kind of representing the guild is that there is this perception that owning a brewery is just fun all the time. and it is 10% fun and 90% running a business.
Sure.
And so making sure that the people that enter this industry are aware of that is very important. Mm-hmm. Making sure that the people that are watching this industry recognize us as, very serious people with serious businesses that employ lots of very serious people. And then also I would say that what's kind of recently become a focus of mine is the challenge of creating a Georgia brand craft beer, that branding Georgia as a craft beer state in the way in which Colorado or North Carolina or California to a certain extent, Oregon, if I can really focus and the guild can really focus on making craft beer integral to Georgia's identity, I think that would be a huge success. I think that right now we kind of face the challenge of when people have beer from Georgia, they say that's good for Georgia, as opposed to this is world class.
Right.
And I think that we really have some world class breweries and world class brewers, and I'm very proud of what we're producing. So it's just about kind of putting Georgia on the map when it comes to craft beer, and that's been a challenge. I'd say the most fun part is I'm an entrepreneur at heart, and this is my way of being a, you know, I get to be an entrepreneur for 30 businesses, not just, you know, my own. And I really enjoy that. I like building things. I like doing all of the stuff that is associated with it, not just the executive stuff. I like the stuffing envelopes and taking phone calls and answering emails and putting that personal touch on this industry. So building, that's my favorite part about it. If people want to follow the guild, they can see us on Twitter at GA Brewers Guild. They can also go to our website. It's www.georgiacraftbrewersguild.org. And they can reach me, Nancy Palmer, at npalmer@georgiacraftbrewersguild.org. Very long name, but if you can type it out, you can reach me.
Also, the Cork and Key.
Yes.
Well.
So Cork and Key is my beverage consulting company. And I do consulting for the guild, but also private clients and restaurants. I do private buying, special events, stuff like that. And a lot of education, which is the stuff that I really actually love the most. I like demystifying wine and making it a little less pretentious. It's just grape juice. It's delicious grape juice. So if you want to hire me to do that, I would love the business. You can reach me at nancy@corkandkey.com.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being here today. Tommy, over to you.
Well, I have to tell you, before I dive in, I tell you, it's really, really fun to see the industry here live. You know, being a producer, we get caught up in our own little world and our distillery every day. So it's really fun and enlightening to see the broader group here. So, you know, I'm really encouraged by everybody here. And thank you guys. Looking forward to working and getting to know everybody further.
Likewise.
So, yeah, thank you. You know, honestly, at the distillery, our biggest challenge, there's really no manual to go back to sort of see how to set things up. There was not a recipe book. There was not a, you need this kind of gas pressure. There wasn't a lot of people to call. Those of us in the distilling industry here in Georgia, as Taylor said, 10 of them roughly, are all very helpful. So they're always a phone call away, but the day-to-day operation and getting the mash right and getting the recipes correct and getting the gas pressure correct all came into play. And that honestly was our biggest challenge and also the most fun, frankly, sort of figuring it out in the distillery. As my business partner, Michael, said, once we got the contractors out of there and the government out of there, it was just us. And we had a good time, grinding our corn and heating our water and cooking up. And once the first time to still actually turned on. We sat with some tailgate chairs in front of it for 2 hours waiting for the the spirits to pop out. And I looked at them and I said, it actually works. So after 4 years of doing that. So that was our, honestly, our biggest challenge and also the most fun that we had.
Most rewarding.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
One of the things that I'm very most proud about is that we're all in this room are leading the charge to the craft beverage industry here. And that's very exciting. I've spent quite a bit of time out west doing some fly fishing and other things and seeing the impact that the craft beverage business has had out there, and the fact that it's coming here and loosening up things a little bit is very exciting to me. So I'm glad to be what I consider on the front end of that from the distilling side. And I think Michael would agree with me. That's an exciting time to be doing that. So we're glad to be doing that as well. And honestly, one of the things that I like the most is our product. Sure. And sort of seeing the process here, we mentioned farm to table earlier, but we like to think of ourselves as farm to bottle, and we're purchasing our raw ingredients as much as we can here locally. We have a farmer in South Georgia that's growing our corn for us. And, one of our investors is actually going to be growing the sugarcane for our molasses for our rum. So we're trying to keep it, sort of in the family as much as we can. And, that part, I'm really encouraged about because I like to see things, benefit the local folks, especially the small guys, as we go forward. And at Independent Distilling, we can be reached at independentdistilling.com. There's some feedback there. Also, you can find us on Facebook. Please like us there. And not a big Facebook guy, but I do post some goofy pictures from time to time of things that we're doing, and seems to be getting some traction. So please follow us and come by and say hello. We're there all the time, sweating away, making some good spirits.
Would love to.
Beer and Facebook, that's a perfect combination. Whatever. Exactly. Oh, date can be dangerous, though. So, yeah. Right.
Okay, last but not least, Eleanor.
Well, and I second what Tommy was saying earlier. It's exciting to sit in the room and hear the various perspectives on the business and kind of feel like you're not alone in some of your confusion. And that would be the hard part about our business, is that we'll be given an opportunity to go do an event somewhere, and all of a sudden you think, oh, am I going to end up in jail if I do this? It's like a tight wire.
And you're
sometimes
saying that's a bad thing then? Yeah.
I think my business partner might not like it if I called him from a payphone. Come bail me out. I wish that I wasn't sometimes on hold at forever with the Department of Revenue. I wish there was a book, as Taylor talked about, that we could kind of look things up. I find myself poring over statutes and things. And again, I mean, I'm a lawyer by trade. You'd think, I can't imagine how this must be for somebody who doesn't have that kind of training.
Sure.
It's got to be very hard. But so I'd love to see a little bit more just continuity or just a place to go to in terms of what we need to do or how we need to do it. In terms of excitement, it is a fun business. Craft beer is awesome. We have great clients. It's funny, Moondog, we've always been very dog friendly. So people be walking the streets of Dunwoody, they'll walk in, they'll have a pint, their dog lays down on the cold floor looking for their treat. And I just think this is a really great way to spend a day. So I am delighted to be a part of it, my piece of it. In terms of Moondog and where you go to see us, the Dunwoody location we talked about, we're in Sandy Springs and Marietta, just 1 mile west of the square on Whitlock. And you can follow us on Facebook and see our goofy pictures of dogs, etc. Or there's also www.moondoggrowlers.com.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great show.
Yeah, I agree. And it's interesting what you're talking about is like being independent distillers or independent in the business, but having the guild or whatever to kind of, you feel that sense of community, I guess, whatever, right? And I love the Bob Berg book. Yeah, Go Giver. I just created a new title. I don't know if Bob will have a problem with this, but I think we're going to write a new book called The Go Growler.
I'm in.
That's funny.
Not bad. Great show, Emily.
Yeah. I wish it was 5 o'clock because now it wants me to go, right.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Exactly. Yeah.
We're reinventing the rules here. It doesn't have to be 5 o'clock.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Good. So thank you so much for listening today. This is Emily Rowell with Atlanta Legal Experts Radio. The show is sponsored by offices at 1100 Peachtree with 4 locations in Atlanta and on the web at offices1100.com. That's offices1100.com. We actually have another sponsor today, by Da Vinci Virtual Offices and Da Vinci Meeting Rooms. You can find them on our Atlanta Legal Experts website. That's ale.businessradiox.com, ale.businessradiox.com. Emily Rowell signing out.